Okay, we are going to be part two of Liver Health with Meridian Grace. Thanks for joining us, Meridian.
Oh, thank you. It's a real joy. Really yes. appreciate the opportunity.
I'm so excited. So last time was part one of Liver Health, and we covered many, many topics. And so if people want to listen to that show, they should do that. And so part two, what did you want to talk about for this version of the Liver Health?
Well, I believe you were interested in talking about different foods that we could add to our diet that would be helpful.
Yeah, I think that's an issue that people would like to learn more about, certain herbs and foods and things like that, as well as probably some things to avoid.
Okay, great.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so what foods should people, let's start with foods that people should avoid or maybe things they should avoid for the liver health.
Well, it's really easy. The things that you want to avoid are things that are not made by nature.
Okay.
I mean, that's the bottom line. Boxed, canned, bagged. If you see a bunch of words on the label that are, you know, 10, 15 letter words, you know they're not going to be a real food.
Right.
So the idea is you want to basically shop in your produce department, in your meat and fish department, and if possible, at the farms themselves, where you can get grass-fed and free-range animal products and organically grown vegetables by people that you trust, and you can share not only your money with them, but your appreciation and your love for what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really the bottom line about the liver. It wants to be treated with things that come from nature, and it understands that.
So whenever you're eating toxic foods, foods with chemicals in them, any of these types of processed foods, these are going to slowly over time damage the liver.
Yes, they're going to be harder for your body to break down because our bodies weren't designed for them.
Mm-hmm.
The body had to learn, you know, is working very hard these days to keep us going. And one of the primary purposes of the liver is filtering and detoxification.
Mm-hmm.
There's many other purposes. It's one of the major organizers of almost every function that goes on in the body,
mm-hmm.
sending information here, there, and everywhere, kind of like a mini brain.
Mm-hmm.
But, and particularly around blood sugar and particularly around digestion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that we make things as easy as we can for the liver. And in this day and age, it's just the opposite. We're forcing our bodies to learn how to function in new ways all the time
mm-hmm.
because we keep putting in more chemicals that the body's never known before.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting in more and wilder and stronger EMFs and things that are throwing the basic energetic functioning of the body off.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to do is find ways to support it and keep it happier.
Now, is it true that the liver is the only organ that regenerates itself?
No, I honestly believe that every tissue regenerates itself. It's just amount of time that it takes to do it.
Okay.
One of my mentors, Natasha Campbell McBride, has shown this over and over again, where we don't think that the brain can regenerate itself, and yet it does over time with these children who've had severe issues. And we don't think it's just that, you know, a larger portion of the brain is being taken over by the portion that's working or, you know, helping it out. We actually think there's a regeneration of the tissue.
Interesting.
But we have to support it with what it needs in order to do that. And that's its own materials.
Okay, so chemicals, dyes, preservatives, any kind of processed food, especially stuff. What about like baked foods? Are those any more particularly damaging to the liver than just regular foods?
What kind of foods did you say baked?
Baked, yeah, like baked breads and things like that.
Well, the big issue is that our breads aren't real bread anymore. And what I mean by that is our ancestors understood that bread is very hard to digest. And so they did a process when they baked bread where they actually fermented it for at least 14 to 28 days in the whole process of baking it and making it.
Oh my goodness.
So they would actually ferment it for 14 to 28 days before they would even bake it.
Mm.
And then they would hang it for at least 28 days before they would eat it. And oftentimes the bread would be 6 months to a year old before it was eaten because the fermentation process was just keeping it stronger and healthier.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah, because we aren't designed. We don't have the type of stomachs that cows do in order to break down that grain. And then also the phytic acid on the grain is really challenging. It requires minerals from us. It actually robs us of minerals in order to break it down. So when we eat things like bread that hasn't been properly made,
mm-hmm.
we're in trouble. And these days we're even in more trouble because, first of all, most of our soil is not healthy any longer and it's been filled with all kinds of chemicals. But let's say we had real organic soil and the water that came from it was relatively clean, because all of our water is acid rain now to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say we had, you know, pretty darn good water to water with. We're still dealing with all kinds of issues of GMO grain, especially in this country. We can't even get non-GMO'd wheat to grow.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
So we have a real problem here. 20 years ago, I had clients that were really allergic specifically to wheat, and they couldn't eat wheat in the United States, but when they went to Europe, they could.
Okay. So.
And that was because there was an early process of genetic modification that took place with wheat many, many years ago. So all the wheat in the United States, none of it is actual original wheat any longer.
Interesting. Okay. So what about in Europe? Is it still original wheat there?
Some places. Other places not.
Okay.
So there are a handful of people that seem to be okay with eating wheat in Europe and can't do it here in the United States.
So
we're talking about actually making real sourdough bread that's been fermented long enough to make it easier to break down and digest.
Wow. Okay. So people could learn how to do that. In fact, that's one of the things that we should do a video about.
Yeah. The Weston A. Price organization actually teaches people how to make real sourdough. But Justin, it's almost impossible to get that real wheat here. So, you know, I don't know that we can actually make that work any longer. There are a handful of people that have strong enough digestive systems and to be able to eat that bread and not get sick. But I really question how many people can really handle it in this day and age.
Mm.
Just because almost all of us, if we haven't had mercury fillings in our own mouths, our parents did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was contributed to us even, you know, before we were in the womb.
Wow.
So it's a big issue to look at.
So the toxicity in our environment, all these things play a factor into people having livers that don't function correctly, or livers that have an inability to process food and create bile with the gallbladder. And so it's sort of like just a combination of all these different factors, right? Poor diet, poor, you know, environmental factors, chemicals and toxins and things that are causing people's livers to not work properly. And what's the result of that? Do people feel their livers, or are other processes in their body not working correctly and it has to do with the liver, but they just don't know it? Or what's going on there?
Well, there's a lot of different things. I mean, first of all, arthritis is oftentimes has a direct relationship to the liver not being able to fully break down toxins.
Okay.
And what we understand from European medicine is that oftentimes arthritis is different microorganisms that are stuck in the capsules of the particular joints.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the joints themselves in some way, like a virus, a fungus, a bacteria, something of that nature, that typically if you had a healthy enough liver, it would be able to break those things down and your joints would be able to function normally. But without having that taken care of, the joints are in pain.
Mm.
The other thing that the liver has a very direct relationship to is the lung and the large intestine.
Mm.
So, I mean, our whole digestive system is greatly involved with the liver. And without the liver being able to function properly, when we're digesting, if we're having digestive issues and the toxins are not breaking down, then the liver gets overwhelmed and can't deal with the toxic effects of a leaky gut, for instance.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And the liver is directly related to the sinuses and allergies and asthma. So when people have issues with the sinuses, oftentimes if they take care of the liver, like someone was just visiting me just before we started talking. And when we tested her on the Asaira, the liver was all over the place showing up for her.
Interesting.
And she has these nasty allergies at this time of the year, and this is liver time.
Okay.
And it's been happening for 20 years. Now, I mean, we're looking into other aspects of it too, because it happens to be with oak. And we were, you know, questioning if there was some relationship to oak, like how, because she comes from Czechoslovakia, you know, uh-huh. if it might have something to do with some form of alcohol that's stored in oak.
Interesting.
Or somebody who died and was in an oak coffin, you know, at the age that hers started. So we were looking at those kinds of aspects, but it's still, you know, a major issue to look at the sinuses themselves in relationship to the liver.
Interesting. Okay. So in general, it's all the processed foods and chemicals. What is fatty liver disease? What is that?
Well, there's fatty liver disease that's part of cirrhosis, but there's also fatty liver disease that happens from just not taking good care of our livers, where the gallbladder is unable to break down fats appropriately. And I would need to go into that in more detail to really explain to you what the actual original causes of fatty liver disease are.
Mm.
But interestingly enough, one of the foods that's really helpful in preventing that is Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts, okay.
Yep, and beetroot.
Beetroot, okay. Yeah, they talk about, I've heard beets are really great for the liver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. And we could talk more about some wonderful recipes to use with beet that's really supportive for the gallbladder, for instance.
So now, you mentioned cirrhosis. Cirrhosis is like a scarring of the liver, and people usually talk about that when people drink too much alcohol, right?
That's right. And there are a number of substances that help to reduce scarring in any part of the body. And there's a homeopathic remedy that I've used so effectively for this sort of thing called thiosaminum.
Okay.
It's actually made of mustard seed. And it can be really profoundly supportive. But, you know, that's not a food. That's an actual homeopathic remedy. And I would recommend that somebody actually work with a homeopath, because there are a number of remedies that are known for supporting the reduction of scar tissue.
And so thiosaminum would help with the cirrhosis and the scarring of the liver.
Yeah, it's great for scarring anywhere in the body.
Anywhere in the body, even scars on the skin?
Oh, absolutely. I've used it for Dupuytren's syndrome and had a complete remission of Dupuytren's with thiosaminum.
Wow, applied
internally, taking it homeopathically, the pellets or the liquid.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So obviously, so drinking is going to be too much alcohol is going to be one of the main causes of liver stress, wouldn't it?
Well, especially if you're going to drink to the point where you pass out and you literally have made your whole body toxic.
Right, yeah, right.
Blood's overwhelmed and your liver has to deal with all of that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, and I'm not somebody who drinks, so I can't really talk of this from my own personal experience. But there are people who feel very strongly that a good red wine, a glass of it every evening, is beneficial to the heart and the body, and there's studies that show that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that could possibly be beneficial, and I have also heard that a small shot of scotch might be beneficial to certain body types, you know, in the, just one shot. We're not talking about drinking a bottle of scotch.
Right, right. Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of,
myself about an ounce or two of red wine. I'm not a big alcohol drinker. In fact, I never drink it. I never really resonated with it. But because of all the studies that have been coming out about it, I've been almost forcing myself to do about 1 or 2 ounces of it each night. I can't say that I feel any different or I don't feel any effects from it, but I've heard the same information about that.
You know, Justin, I kind of think that working with grapeseed extract or working with resveratrol might actually be more beneficial. But
yeah,
you can experiment.
Yeah, you're getting
always on your own body.
Yeah, you're getting all of the good stuff without the alcohol that way, right?
That's right.
Right.
And there's people who have TH1 issues and people who have TH2 issues. I'd have to look it up, but I believe people with TH2 issues do so well on grapeseed extract.
Really?
Whenever they have an inflammatory problem.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So there's going to be some people that do super well with, you know, grapeseed extract and a little bit of wine, and other people, it's not going to make any difference at all.
Interesting. So what about fat, eating lots and lots of fat? Is that going to be a strain on people's liver? Or I'm sure it depends on what type of fat people are eating, right?
Yeah, that's the key. And animal fats have been the primary food of many of our ancestors. But the fat was from natural wild animals.
Uh-huh.
They're grass-fed. They're eating what they're supposed to be eating. It's totally different when you force-fed an animal. So the kind of meat that people buy in supermarket that's just, you know, gone through the stock situation where there are thousands of animals in a small area in their own feces and being force-fed with antibiotics and high levels of grain and sugars to make them fat really fast,
mm-hmm.
and put on a bunch of weight so that there will be more poundage to sell.
Mm-hmm.
That's a totally different story than from a natural, healthy animal that's been butchered in a humane way, or from, you know, somebody who's been out hunting and gotten a wild, like elk or something like that.
Completely different animal, right?
Completely different. And the fats from those types of animals, the fats from grass-fed meat, can be extremely beneficial because of how the cholesterol in them is the source that we need in order to produce our own hormones.
Okay.
Cholesterol, and that's another thing about the liver, cholesterol is broken down into different metabolites, well, actually precursor hormones. The first one is pregnenolone, which gives us mental clarity. And then through a number of cascades of different processes, that pregnenolone is broken down into DHEA, which gives us energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then another cascade breaks that down into estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone.
Interesting. Okay.
So what happens is if we don't get the cholesterol that we need from our diet, it forces the liver to have to make more. And it's hard on it.
So do you think that it could be what people are feeling as pain sometimes? That could be one of the reasons?
It's hard for me to say that. I'm not sure. Are you talking about pain in the liver itself?
Yeah, sometimes I've heard people mention how they have feels like their liver's just kind of got a cramp or it's tightening up or something. And I wonder if that could be one of the things that's going on there.
Yeah, that would just be a conjecture on my part. I would have to really talk to the individual because we are all so unique about how this happens.
Now,
typically something like that would be the gallbladder.
The gallbladder.
Yeah.
Now, sugar is also something that's an issue, right?
Yes.
Sugar just about affects every organ in the body, doesn't it?
It does. And the liver is also involved with breaking down of sugar and the whole glycolysis process. And it also is a storage site for a certain amount of sugar. So we have it if we need it in the case of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the liver's got its little hands in everything.
Yeah, they don't call it the most important organ for anything, for nothing, do they? It's like, oh,
yeah,
of course.
It's pretty amazing. But it's amazing also that the liver can function very well with parts of it gone, which is also incredible to me. How, you know, the body is just so determined to support us in being well that it's found ways around just about everything.
It's almost like each organ can be a hologram, right? Almost, or the whole body's a hologram kind of, and like certain organs will pick up the slack for other organs that have nothing to do with the organ that maybe got removed.
Well, every cell is a hologram, so yeah, it's pretty amazing. And so probably amazing. If we were to get down to it, you know, every atom and everything else would be a hologram.
Isn't that just amazing?
For all that is. I'm just in awe daily of how brilliant it all is.
It's amazing. What about things like trans fatty acids and these types of foods that people eat? Those got to be damaging on the liver as well, because it's kind of like a fat, but it's not really something your body recognizes, right?
To me, that's not even food. You know? I mean, I call it Frankenfood, and I really don't even think I should put the word food into it at all.
I know, right?
You know, these are these weird chemicals that people have designed to take and replace foods, and the body is not stupid. It knows it's a replacement. It knows it's not whole. It knows it's not complete. And if it's not made by God, it doesn't have the etheric qualities and energies that we need to be really nourished by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a piece that most people just don't understand, how the deeper aspects of, you know, what food actually is not being respected by all of these bizarre chemical things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
People are looking for ways to get patents on things so they can make money, but they're not recognizing the profound harm they're doing, not only to us, but to future generations by forcing this stuff on people.
So when people have good liver health, they could expect, like you said, it can affect the lungs, it can affect your large intestines, your digestion. So when people's liver health is really popping, it's really good, it's really functioning correctly, they
it
can expect...
It affects your eyesight too, Justin.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So
liver is majorly important for the eyesight.
So if people have eye issues, they can consider liver health as well, like glaucoma and really anything to do with the eyes?
Absolutely. All of the eye issues.
Isn't that interesting? All directly affect the liver.
Yeah. And of course, you know, there's a whole big thing, the ultimate emotion having to do with lack and the liver.
Uh-huh.
We only look at it really from the idea of anger, but lack is major and so is lack of organization.
Really?
But when people feel like they're missing out on love or they're missing out on money or they're missing out on support or, you know, all the major needs of human emotion, you know, to be happy.
Uh-huh.
That lack can definitely deeply affect us. So if we're experiencing the lack by something we're seeing that's painful to us,
mm-hmm.
the eyes can be greatly affected by that. And if we have a stronger liver, we'll be in a position where lack will not affect us as much as other people.
Interesting. Okay, so it's almost like a buffer to the outside world or to your own emotions if you have a strong, healthy, functioning liver.
Everything's connected to everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we work at the organ level, it will have an effect on the emotional level as well. If we have a really weak liver, it's going to be very hard for us to deal with anger when it shows up. We won't have the strength to deal with it, nor the ability to have the wisdom to deal appropriately with lack, nor the ability to organize.
Mm-hmm.
And all the challenges that we see in Recall Healing that, you know, Rich will be talking to you a lot more about, you know, all those pieces are going to also be affected from the organ side as well as from the ancestral side and the emotional aspects of things that have happened to us in the womb and all of that. They all interplay. Every aspect is important.
Interesting. That's so fascinating. Yeah. So there's much more going on than just, you know, foods to avoid and foods to take in and different cleanses and stuff. I mean, this all goes very deep.
I mean, I know for me, my basic go-to emotion about all this is awe.
Is awe.
Just awe. Full out wonder like a child. How on earth can this all come together? And can we look deeper than what we've been told?
Mm-hmm.
This is not just a little machine here, this liver, that we've been trained to look at it as.
Mm-hmm.
It has direct relationships on so many levels, so many aspects of who we are as humans. But why don't we talk about some things that people can do that would be loving on their livers?
Let's do that, because that's, you know, people know what to avoid, you know. I mean, it's kind of just general, any kind of toxin, processed food, chemical. Yeah, let's talk about some of the things we can do, either food or different things they can do for their liver.
Okay. So for starters, you probably already know this one. Most people, I think, know this one, that lemon water is a really sweet thing to do first thing in the morning.
Now, I do a little bit of lemon water, but I kind of warm it up a little bit. Is that good?
Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
Definitely warm is always better for the digestive system because its basic temperature is heat.
Okay.
So we even talk about the digestive system as Agni, and that means fire in the Ayurvedic world.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to use hot water and squeeze some lemon into it. And then depending upon other things that are going on, we might decide to add a few other things to it. But just lemon water is a wonderful thing to support the liver. And honestly, the whole citrus family, but especially lemon, because we're not going to challenge the sugar functions at all.
Oh, good.
We'll just have lemon.
Now, I've heard people not mention lime too much, but I guess lime could work as well.
Lime definitely can work as well, and okay. I happen to adore lime, so I use lime a lot.
Okay.
And, of course, you want to get your hands on organic lemon and lime. And the oil, limonin, is actually from the peel of the lemon, and a drop or two of that, for people who are playing a lot with essential oils these days, is also a wonderful detoxifier for the liver.
Ah, so you can put that in your water throughout the day.
You can. You can have your water bottle and put a drop of lemon in it.
Ah, okay. I like
that. The limonin, I mean, or you could actually squeeze some fresh lemon juice. Either one is wonderful.
How do you say the name of that essential oil from the skin?
It's limonin.
Limonin, okay.
Mm-hmm. But they might always, you know, I've seen it on a lot of bottles where they just call it lemon.
Okay.
But the more technical name is limonin.
Limonin. Okay. That's good.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great way to start, you know, is with some warm water and taking some nice deep breaths before you take it in, because breathing is also just wonderful for the liver. And, there's also some really sweet understandings that come from Oriental tradition about sounds that help the liver or that help any organ. And in this case, I believe the sound is just a shh.
I like that. Okay, so you can do that yourself.
Yeah, you just take a nice deep breath in. And release it. Why don't we do it together?
Okay,
let's take a nice deep breath. And then.
I like that. So you can do that for during your meditation time. It would be perfect for that.
You certainly can. And it's, you know, it's interesting. The other day, Rich and I did this sweet little ritual.
Uh-huh.
It was after we had a little challenge, but. We walked through the house and we just said, you know, our hearts are full of love and understanding. Our hearts are full of love and understanding.
Mm.
And you could do that with your liver as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my liver is full of love and understanding. My liver is full of love and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you know that you've been out the night before, and you've done something that you don't think is good for your liver, drank too much or had those trans fatty, you know, some kind of chips or something or another.
Right, right.
I mean, you could basically say, even though I know that I did something that's hard for your liver, I want you to know that I love and respect you and I'm sorry.
Mm.
Please forgive me. Thank you.
Wow.
I love you.
That's powerful. That's like the Ho'oponopono kind of thing.
It is Ho'oponopono.
Yeah.
It is
Ho'oponopono. Yeah, I
last do Ho'oponopono for our livers and parts of ourselves as well.
Yeah, I was just gonna say last night I did this a little bit in the shower before bed. I was sort of just talking to my organs and putting my hand over my liver, and knowing that we're gonna do this talk today, and just kind of prayed to my liver, and you know, and just talked to it and thanked it for doing so much hard work and doing all the heavy lifting of detoxification. And you know, you can do this in the shower and no one's going to hear you. So, you know, even if you have a spouse that doesn't believe in all the weird stuff that we all believe, then you can do this alone and no one will think you're crazy. But it's a good thing to do, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, we might know a fact, like even if 2/3 of the liver was removed, you know, surgically or something like that, that the liver would still function for us. But why do things that's going to harm the liver when we can actually have a healthy, beautiful liver?
Mm-hmm.
And why not communicate with it and let it know, okay, I blew it, but now I'm sending you my love. I'm sending you my healing. I'm sorry. And I'm not going to do that if I can help it again. You know, let's make some changes. Let me give you some lemon water. Let me give you some dandelion tea.
Mm-hmm.
Taraxacum, which is one of the most well-known liver remedies for hundreds of years, maybe even thousands.
Dandelion
but it goes
tea.
Back in, you know, the literature to the Druids and all of that. I mean, during springtime, during the time of liver, dandelions are popping up everywhere. And I believe we talked a little bit about that in our last talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the roots themselves are the most powerful. And people have even made a coffee substitute with the roots.
Really?
So, I mean, that's another thing you could drink in the morning, if you like, or different parts of the day, you could use tinctures of taraxacum. And not only could we use tinctures of it, but we can use homeopathics of it.
Ah, okay. Now, can people get these at their health food store, do you think?
For the most part, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of health food stores would have homeopathic taraxacum.
How do you spell that, taraxacum?
You're asking me?
Probably just sounded out, right?
Look it up. But it's T-A-R, I think, A-X-I-C-U-M. I'm not positive.
Okay, that sounds
but
good.
But if you look up dandelion and look for the Latin word, it'll be taraxacum.
Taraxacum, okay. Well, that would
so
be a good thing for
much
people.
Homeopathics do. They use the name of the Latin name for the substance.
Okay, so that would be something people could do in their water along with the lemon maybe.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They could do that. And if you're going to do it in your water, I recommend that you do that as an herb tincture.
Okay.
And those are readily available at almost all health food stores.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. And what about people talk a lot about like root vegetables like beets and carrots. Those are supposed to be really good for the liver too, right?
They're amazing. I mean, fresh carrot root is so detoxifying and cleansing, but beetroot is the granddaddy of them all.
Really?
It's so powerfully blood purifying. I have a crazy story of my own personal experience with beetroot. When I was probably about 17 or so, I was working for a family making natural food for them, and I was a raw food vegan in those days. And I was making them juices from their garden. And I was in Mount Shasta, and I mean, it was just amazing, the soil there. And we had these beautiful big beets, and I didn't know any better. And I made like a quart of beet juice, and I probably drank a cup or more of straight beet juice. And the people I was working for found me on the floor with the the juicer running.
Oh no.
Because it had detoxed my blood so quickly.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you want to be careful with beetroot. It is a powerful medicine. And you really don't want to do more than half a beet at a time.
Okay.
If you're going to do it in the form of juice.
Okay.
And when people have gallbladder issues, one of my favorite things, and the gallbladder is definitely related to the liver, one of my favorite things to have people do is to grate a beet and one or two apples and use lemon juice and olive oil, which is also very beneficial for all these things are great for the liver. And I chop up some fresh parsley, another one that's wonderful for the liver. And oftentimes I'll put in either a little bit of ginger, where I grate the ginger and squeeze the ginger juice into it. or garlic, all of which are healers for the liver.
Interesting. Okay, so that would make like a little salad kind of a thing.
It's a delicious salad, and just having a few bites of that before every meal is a wonderful natural detoxifier for the liver.
So now that sounds really good. That sounds really interesting. So you could make enough, if you had a few beets and a few apples and things, you could make enough to last a couple weeks if you just ate a couple bites a day.
You could, honey, but that kind of food you want to eat fresh.
Okay.
So I wouldn't do more than 2 days at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you have a food processor, it doesn't take any time at all.
Oh, okay.
You know, of course, it's always better to hand grate because you have your own loving energy going into it. But, you know, these days, if you can use a food processor, that's awesome. And just, you know, make it up and eat it. Because that doesn't take more than a couple minutes to make that.
Okay.
If you're using a food processor.
And then you would just take a couple bites of that before a meal?
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to stop at a couple of bites.
So that tastes so good, doesn't it? That,
you know, you can have a half a cup, and as you build up, you might even be able to have a cup without getting toxic. I mean, having too much toxin come out.
That sounds tasty.
It's very tasty.
I like that.
It's your choice of whether you want to work with ginger or garlic. But garlic is so helpful as a antioxidant, and also something that tends to balance or help with different bacterial, fungal, viral things.
I like that. So what are the ingredients once again? So that would be beet and apple, starting with that, right?
Uh-huh. So you can say one part beet to two parts apple.
Okay.
And you can trade that around as you get into it more. You use more beet than apple. But to start out with, I'd start with one part beet, two parts apple. Like this, the juice of a lemon, half a lemon if you're just doing half a beet.
Okay.
If you're going to do, you know, a whole beet and two apples, then I would probably use the whole lemon at least.
Okay.
And if it doesn't taste sour enough to you, that means your body wants more sour. So add more lemon.
Okay.
And I would do equal parts of lemon juice to olive oil.
Okay.
And then I personally love ginger, but you want to play with that for yourself. People who tend to be really red and hot and sweat very profusely would not want to use ginger.
Okay.
Because it's very heating to the body. But if you're not one of those people, you can use as much ginger as you want.
Okay.
Particularly if you run cold.
Okay.
And so you can like measure like the distance of, from the top of your thumb down to the first knuckle.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be a good amount for that.
Okay.
And you grate it. And, you know, if you're doing a food processor, I would just grate that right in when you're grating everything else and not worry about making it into juice.
Okay.
Just grate it in just before you do take the skin off. And then chop up like a handful of fresh parsley.
Fresh parsley. Okay.
I tend to use the curly parsley for this purpose, but if you prefer Italian, use the Italian leaf parsley.
And then how much would you do? Just a handful of that?
Yeah, just a handful. Chop it up real fine. And, you know, when you've got all your grated mixed together with your oil and your lemon on, throw the parsley on and blend it all up with it.
Wow.
And if you like, you can throw in some Himalayan sea salt or some Celtic sea salt and a tiny bit of pepper, black pepper, if you're good with black pepper.
Now, what about, speaking of black pepper, what about adding a little, you know, sauerkraut or turmeric to that?
I would do those separate.
Okay.
The turmeric could go in, but sauerkraut is so profound for supporting stomach acid, especially when it's eaten by itself, that when I'm fixing dinner, I usually will grab a spoon or two of sauerkraut or sauerkraut juice.
Okay.
And that stimulates your stomach acid. And I'm pretty amazed because I used to burp and belch all the time, and it's really getting under control.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
I'm also using something called a Saluna, which is a remedy that comes from Europe that's for the stomach. And it definitely made a huge difference.
Interesting.
But for many people, all they need is a little bit of sauerkraut juice.
And what about adding a little, like a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar to this?
You think that would
It's
be
not necessary for this because you're using the lemon.
Oh, you could
one or the other.
Okay.
So, but you can, you know, if you like it, if you want even more sour, it's fine to do it. It won't hurt it. But in this case, we're going after the lemon for its liver healing effects.
This sounds so amazing. It sounds like it would taste great, and it's got the oils, and every ingredient in there is going to be a liver cleanser and a liver healer.
And I'll let you in on a secret. When my clients have things like gallstones, this is part of the process we use so that they don't have gallstones anymore.
Oh.
This is actually a healer for that.
Gallstones. So what kind of thing do you put them on?
Like, what kind of thing do I put the salad on?
No, like what kind of method do you put them on? Do you like have your clients eat a certain amount of this per day or for a certain amount of time?
I usually ask them to eat it every meal as long as it tastes good to them. And usually they just love it. Their bodies crave it and need it.
So what happens to the gallstones over time? They just dissolve or?
Yeah, they do start dissolving.
Isn't that fascinating?
And interestingly enough, there's a lot of information right now that is saying that we need to do just the opposite of what doctors have been telling us forever to do about gallstones. They would tell us to eat a low-fat diet, stay away from fats.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that caused the gallstone in the first place, forcing the liver to have to make the fats for the body. And those fats would find themselves wrapping around some kind of microorganism or parasite and mm-hmm. forming a gallstone. So the idea is they're suggesting that what we actually need to do is do things like add some raw milk sour cream or kefir made with cream.
Uh-huh.
So they actually got real fat into the diet. And there's a little recipe that I could give you for this.
Yes, I would love that.
Okay. So this is from Natasha Campbell McBride and a couple of additions from some European doctors as well who've added one piece
James.
To I'll share with you, but
okay.
I'll give you the foundation recipe first. So we start out with a cup, or let's say half a cup. We'll make it less for people, but you could do a whole cup if you wanted to.
Okay.
Of either creme fraiche from organic grass-fed animals.
What is creme fraiche?
Creme fraiche is like a sour cream. It's a European sour cream. It's just lovely.
Okay.
And it's made with sometimes raw milk. If you in California can definitely get it easily.
Oh.
For most of us, we'd have to make our own because it's not available in grocery stores. But Californians are pretty lucky that way. Probably folks in Oregon, too.
I like that. Okay.
So creme fraiche. You can get an organic sour cream if you want.
Okay.
You can use any type of cream-based you can use yogurt that's made with cream instead of with milk. So that'll give you that fat that we're looking for.
Okay.
And then put in a raw egg.
One raw egg. Okay.
And that gives us the vitamin A, D, and K. And A is a very important vitamin. It's a fat-soluble vitamin for the liver, as is vitamin D, also very important for the liver, and vitamin K. So all three of those are going to be in that raw egg. And then you use fresh squeezed vegetable juice. And if you need to, you can use some fruit juice in that vegetable juice.
Okay.
So you can put in an apple, which happens to be very, very good for the liver. So, you know, a green apple would be great with maybe some celery and a little bit of carrot and beet. Especially the beet right now for liver time.
Mm-hmm.
And cucumber, if you like, and parsley. So all those things we just talked about, you know, having in the salad, you can put those in your vegetable juice. And that's the basic recipe. And you blend that up. You use a whisk and whisk it up and drink it. And it's like a little milkshake.
Now, how much vegetable juice would they use in that?
About a cup.
About
two cups, depending upon your desire.
Okay.
Okay? Some people would want more juice. But if you really want to make this into a liver tonic,
uh-huh.
you'll use a tablespoon of raw liver.
Ooh, okay.
And this is like going back into really ancient understandings about healing through organotherapy.
Okay.
When you go to some cancer clinics, like the Gerson clinics, they always have you use raw liver every day, a few times a day in your diet to help heal the liver, because the liver is so involved with healing cancer.
Now, would you want the liver of a specific animal, or does it matter?
It just needs to be a natural, healthy animal. That's the most important part.
Okay.
Okay? So I personally don't have an issue about concerns about parasites and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if from a healthy animal, I would if it was from, you know, from a feedlot animal. But if you're doing raw liver and you have that concern, if you freeze the liver for 14 days, it would kill any type of parasitic creature that's in there.
Interesting.
It 14... gets rid of some of the enzymes, but it's still beneficial.
Okay, so you can freeze it for 14 days and defrost it after that.
Right. So if you're going to do that, I recommend that you cut it up into 1 or 2 ounce sizes, depending upon what size you're going to use, and wrap it up in some parchment paper. I don't like to put anything in plastic.
Okay.
And then freeze it.
Okay. And there's something about 14 days. You want to make sure it's the full 2 weeks?
Yeah. I don't bother. But, you know, a lot of people are concerned about that. And if they are, that's how to deal with the concern.
Okay. Well, that's much better than boiling it or cooking it, right, to do the same thing?
Yeah. In this case, you're getting the raw liver. You're getting the information, kind of like you're getting everything that's in a healthy, natural liver, and your body is getting that information. So it's like having a little conversation with the liver about, this is what you need, and I'm giving it to you.
Okay. And
to help you remember how to find your way back to being healthy again.
I like that. So where would people get a raw liver?
You know, any butcher shop, but Whole Foods, you know, and I'm sure any health food store would have raw organic liver.
Okay. And then if they don't, you can always work with the butcher there at Whole Foods or any major health food store. And they could probably source that for you.
Well, let me tell you where to go if you want any information anywhere in the world about where to find grass-fed and natural farm-raised foods.
Okay.
The Weston A. Price Foundation. Everybody, there's chapters of Weston A. Price Foundations all over the world now, but definitely the United States is loaded with them. And your chapter leader will be able to tell you where to source all of the grass-fed things, things like duck eggs, goose eggs, quail eggs, chicken eggs that have all been grown in a healthy, loving environment, where to get, you know, good marrow, where to get organ meats, where to get just about anything you can think of.
Interesting. Okay. So, yeah.
Homemade for you already broths, you know, sauerkrauts from people that are, you know, making the real thing with just salt and organic vegetables.
Nice.
Homemade kefirs and yogurts, all that sort of thing.
Okay. So that can help people find a chapter in their area.
That's right.
I like that.
Just, you know, plug in your Google to Weston A. Price Foundation, and they're just a fabulous source for it all.
Okay. Well, that's great. That'll help people find. And I believe there's a, isn't there a farm, the Miller's Organic Farm out in Pennsylvania that has a lot of good stuff as well?
Well, I love it when we have access to Amish that are still doing things in the old-fashioned way.
Uh-huh.
There's a wonderful character named Amos, and Rich used to get a lot of his organ meats from them, and they would actually send him organ meats in blue ice. I forget what they call that. Dry ice.
Oh, dry ice, yeah.
Yeah, and he'd get together with a group of friends, and they would take the raw organs. They haven't been frozen, throw them in the blender, and add a bunch of juices and things to it, and share these organ meats. And they just said they felt like $1 million.
Wow.
They would use brain. They would use heart. They would use liver. All these different organs. And, I mean, I've done it with individual organs as I've needed them. Like, I've got heart in the freezer right now from a grass-fed cow. But Amos would send him these beautiful organs that were, you know, not frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have a big party with all their friends and drink these amazing elixirs.
I love it. Better than booze, right?
Much better than booze if you want to be healthy.
Yeah. I love it. That's so great. And so you would whip this up and just down the hatch.
That's right. And the weird part is when you make the drink that I'm talking to you about, you won't even taste the liver.
Wow.
And if you do, use a little less, but you want to use a really good blender like a Vitamix or a Blendtec.
Okay.
So that you can really, you know, get it completely blended in.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Yeah. And then, you know, your second best thing, of course, and it's still wonderful, is to, you know, have some pate from grass-fed animals. There's wonderful recipes online. So you can have some pate, or you can make some wonderful liver recipes yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I go through these cycles where my body just craves chicken livers.
Oh, wow.
With onion, garlic, and butter. And I'll usually make it with shiitake mushrooms, which is also great for the liver. And there's a time, I mean, when I'm going through a liver cycle, I might want to eat that every day for 2 or 3 weeks. But your body won't know if you want to eat something like that if you've never given it to yourself.
I see. Okay. So that's one of the ways of sort of getting better connection and better communication with your body.
Yeah. And if you can somehow, because many of us have such negative ideas about the liver.
Uh-huh.
You know, we think of it as dirty because it's a filter, but the filter is not the dirty part. The dirty part is our blood.
Okay.
The liver is as clean as any other organ in the body.
Because the toxins from a liver, because that's, you know, this could be something people are thinking about. What about the toxins that come into a liver of, let's say, like a grass-fed healthy cow? The liver's processing those toxins and then they move through the liver, but they don't get stored in the liver, right?
No, they don't. So they're not going to be any more toxic than any other organ in the body.
Okay. That makes sense. So people don't have to be afraid of eating liver and accumulating more toxicity.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But all the organ meats are higher in vitamins and minerals and purines, which can be so helpful for brain and nerve and overall support for all of the different joints and muscles and things like that, but particularly the joints.
Okay, so that kind of takes me back to what you said a little while ago about the fats, because you go online and you look up articles about liver health, and just about every conventional article is going to tell you, you know, to avoid fats. They say avoid trans fats, which is great, but they say avoid fats of all kinds. And that's mm-hmm. sort of counterintuitive to what you're saying, is that if you eat fat, your liver doesn't have to create the fat. And so it puts less stress on the liver. And that's one of the ways of rebuilding the liver strength, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you want to do it gently and slowly, especially if you're one of those people who is like me, who, you know, was a vegan for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the only fat that I got was olive oil and some sesame oil and, you know, hemp oil and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know about coconut oil in those days.
Oh, wow. Or avocados. Did you eat those?
Hmm?
Did you have avocados?
I did eat avocados.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, avocados are a lot more carbohydrate than they are fat. They're really not that fatty. People think they are, but if you start looking at the actual breakdown, there's a lot more carbohydrate in them than a fat.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, anyway, there's a lot to be said about all of this, but
now
it's just a matter of playing bit by bit and exploring and seeing how your body deals with it.
Now, what about herbs like milk thistle and, well, you already talked about dandelion. That could be like an herb. And what, you know, these types of things, are they something that people should consider to do on a daily basis?
Silymarin is the active component that's in milk thistle. And it's also in artichoke, globe artichoke.
Ah, okay.
So, yes, you can use milk thistle or you can use artichoke tinctures. You can also eat any of the thistle family. I mean, an artichoke is from the thistle family.
Okay.
If you look at one growing, they're absolutely extraordinarily beautiful. They look like a thistle with a flower that's like almost the size of a cantaloupe that's wow. beautiful and purple. And then the artichoke forms.
Wow.
It's so gorgeous. So, yeah, definitely silymarin-type substances are fantastic to have for the liver.
And in general, bitter foods are good for the liver. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the flavor that the liver is most drawn to, is bitter. So
bitter food.
When I was backpacking in the woods in springtime, I would just eat any new shoot that was coming up. And they were always tender. I mean, you couldn't do that past a few weeks of their age. But and they, a lot of them were very bitter. But my body seemed to really love it.
Yeah, they talk about bitters and you know, supplements and bitters and bitter food, and that makes a lot of sense for the liver.
Yeah, so bitters are another thing that people can do before meals if they have digestive issues. And one of my favorite herbs to put into a bitter is gentian, which is probably the most bitter thing I've ever tasted.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, is that what form do you take that in?
A tincture.
A tincture, okay. And how do you spell that?
Put a few drops into some water.
Okay, and how do you spell that?
I think it's G-E-N-T-I-A-N.
Gentian, okay.
It's in a lot of the bitters combinations.
And you can get this at a health food store, a tincture of it, I bet.
Yeah, they're available at health food stores.
Gentian, okay. And people can do that as a little pre-meal shot.
Definitely, during this season of the year especially.
Now, with bitter flavors and bitter foods that you were talking about, I would imagine the things like spinach or leafy greens would be good as well.
They are. They're wonderful. But we have to watch out about one thing, and that is if you tend to be hypothyroid, a lot of the greens are going to be challenging to you.
Okay.
They could actually lower your thyroid function.
Okay.
And some of the recent research that I read really upset me because I love having lots of kale and chard and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was okay just cooking them. But they said, no, even cooking them for half an hour and making them so mushy you wouldn't want to eat them, they still have 70% of the what's called goitrogens
really?
In them that are challenging to people with slow thyroids.
That is interesting. Even after cooking them for a half an hour.
Yeah, and you wouldn't want to eat them after that. I mean, I really like my things lightly cooked,
wow.
my vegetables lightly cooked. So it's something to think about, you know, when it comes to if you're somebody who's really lean and, you know, hyper and fast, that could be fine for you. But if you're tending to be overweight and having a slow thyroid and moody and having difficulty, you know, getting through your day for your energy,
mm-hmm.
You might want to question how much you're going to be eating along those lines.
Now, if people, going back a little bit to the fresh raw liver, if people are a little averse to that, is it possible for people to take, do they make supplements that you can take in liver, you know, of liver,
yes,
like standard
process?
And they
make really good ones these days too.
Okay.
Just need to check on the source. You definitely don't want anybody using liver from, you know, the feedlots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no good. That's no good. Okay, so like Standard Process, I think, has some of these things, don't they?
Standard Process does, but you have to see a practitioner in order to get Standard Process. There's some other wonderful ones that are out there that are from grass-fed animals, and from what I understand, Standard Processes are not. You might want to check that out more thoroughly, but when I spoke with the reps, they told me that they had so many, their orders were so huge that they couldn't guarantee that they had grass-fed sources.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I use other sources for my liver than Standard Process.
Can you share what those sources would be for people?
I mean, first of all, I do metabolic typing. So I have access to liver through the organization that's involved with metabolic typing, but you'd need to go through me or another person who does metabolic typing to get that.
Okay.
And let me see if I can take this computer with me into the other room, and I'll grab.
Nice. Are you still there?
Good. Okay.
Okay. Good.
So, can you hear me?
I can still hear you. Yes.
Great, Justin. I'm going to take the computer into my pharmacy and take a look at some names of other glandulars.
I like that. Okay, excellent. And before you do that, what about potassium-rich foods in the liver? Are those helpful to the liver?
You know, we need all the minerals, all of them, but we need them in balance. So if it's going to come in a food source, yeah, it's great. If it's not going to come in a food source, then we could be in trouble.
I see. Okay.
So I have buffalo liver here from Carlson's, and that you should be able to get at a health food store.
Carlson's. Okay. Is that with a, that must be with a C, Carlson's? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Carlson is a pretty well-known, typical fish oil person, company. And it's range-fed and freeze-dried.
Oh, good. And this is in capsule form, so people can just down the hatch with this and avoid the raw liver if they're too averse to it.
That's right. And then there's a company called Atrium that I believe also does liver. I get a lot of my different glandulars. Like I have thymus here and ovary and orchic. And, you know, whenever you have an illness in an organ, taking the glandulars of the organ is something that our ancestors really understood as a powerful healing.
Interesting.
Source.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's by a company called Atrium.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And people can, if they're listening to this as members, they can contact you, right, within the website or through email.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
I'd be happy to help them source these things.
That's great. Okay. Carlson's and Atrium for glandulars. And people can get, can they get these things at their health food store or online, or would they need to go through you?
Atrium, I think they can get at a health food store. Okay. They can probably ask their health food store to carry it for them. And the other one that I talked to you about, the Carlson is definitely at health food stores. That's a typical health food store line.
Okay.
So that should be a good source for them to be able to get it on their own.
Now, you can't talk about liver health without talking about our friend, the coffee enema. now, people should consider this, should they not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's amazing the difference. I know for myself, there's certain practices that took me months of, you know, looking at the thing that was involved with it, you know, and just going, oh, I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Right.
But I would say that if you can get through whatever issues you have about doing a coffee enema, you will be so thrilled afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
That's been the overall experience of almost everyone. I mean, there's a handful of people that have a sensitivity to coffee.
Uh-huh.
And if you know you're allergic to coffee, don't be silly. Don't do one.
Okay.
But if you're not allergic to coffee, there's such a totally different functioning that happens when it goes through the portal valve and into your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
And when it goes through the mouth and the digestive cavities in that way.
It's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're going to do a whole thing on coffee enemas. We'll do some videos. And there's also ways for people to get their nutrients depending on how they mix up the brew for the coffee enema. So you guys are really, really kind of on the cutting edge of that stuff. And so when we come out and visit you, I think we're going to do some videos on coffee enemas.
Yeah, I think so, Justin. I mean, just so you know, for years as a naturopath, I wasn't working with medical doctors. And so I didn't have access to IVs.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered really early on that we could put anything that we wanted to put pretty much in an IV into the body through an enema. So, you know, for the people who are listening, you can end up, you know, if you've really researched well and feel very confident that you need a certain nutrient, you know, you can use your enemas to be free of IVs.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah, to be your own doctor in a way, which is what, you know, ultimately we want to do.
Mm-hmm. This is what this whole site that we're doing here is all about, is empowering people to do this work and to know why they're doing it and to be able to, you know, take their health into their own hands and be their own doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what I did for years. And I mean, I can't tell you the results that I've had, you know, with people with really serious chronic fatigue and things getting well using this as part of their therapy. Mm. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the whole therapy, where there's a whole bunch of things that contribute, especially our mental, emotional, and spiritual state. But what we put into our bodies makes a huge difference, and supporting our bodies to be able to get things out well is partly, you know, what we're talking about when we work with the liver. And having good bowel movements, although that's not what coffee enemas are about, they're about cleansing the liver, is a secondary effect, a gift that comes along with doing a coffee enema.
So I really like your approach in terms of the liver health, because, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, a lot of people will just damage their bodies, you know, people that don't understand this kind of stuff and they just live a regular life, they'll just damage their bodies. And every now and then they'll do some kind of cleanse so that they can lose a few pounds so they can fit in their jeans. But really what we're talking about here is it's love. It's about prevention. It's about appreciation and gratitude for the liver. It's about living a lifestyle that is conducive towards liver health, and being friendly and kind to the liver through different methods, and doing this on a daily basis so that you keep your liver always healthy, always functioning properly to support you in whatever it is you're trying to do in life, right?
It's true.
Yeah. Anything else we should cover for people with the liver?
Well, honey, there's so much, but I think we've covered plenty today. I'd like to talk, you know, more about energetic substances that people can get their hands on.
Okay.
At another time, because it's a whole, you know, realm in itself.
Okay.
But it can really make a huge difference for a lot of folks to have a little bit of an understanding of some of the primary homeopathics and how to work with them for yourself.
I like that. Okay, we'll do a part three on that then, energetics of the liver.
Okie dokie.
I love that. Thanks, Meridian.
You're so welcome.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment/cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader/viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.